Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Calling It Podcast, recording Friday, January 10th, just after 12 o'clock. I'm Alex Barth, as always, joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're powered by CLNS Media. Lebowitz, I feel like Paul Rudd because two shows in a week. Us? Who would have thought? Not us.
Not me.
Not us. Who would have thought he's opening the hot sauce? Anyway.
I know the reference.
Okay, good. I'll tune it out later. This is good because there's a lot to talk about today. We kind of recapped the Patriots on the last episode. You can find that on our Twitter account. But we got to get to everything else. We're going to get to a lot in this episode. We have to start, though, Lebowitz. Oddly enough, we came on. We were talking about what we were going to discuss. We were thinking, the Celtics, they're kind of struggling a little bit. The Bruins finally got hot last night. But we're actually going to start with the team that is off season right now. And that is the Boston Red Sox. Because it dropped, what was it, Tuesday, I think? Monday, Tuesday? Evandrella, Ken Rosenthal dropped the story. The Red Sox were basically doing during the 2018 season the same thing the Astros have been accused of doing, cheating, using a video monitor behind the dugout to monitor signs between the pitcher and the catcher, yada, yada, yada. Now, we don't know what the penalty is going to be yet. I would imagine it's going to be very severe for Cora because he was involved in both the Astros and the Red Sox side of things. Before I go into my whole spiel, Lebowitz, because we're like a minute in, you haven't said a word yet, your take on this.
Well, there is a difference between what the Red Sox did and what the Astros did, from my understanding. The Astros, it was more intricate. They would, bang trash cans and whatnot to try to signify what the sign was. What the Red Sox did was they used the replay monitoring room, but there was a runner. They'd only steal signs if there were a runner on base, on second base. And correct me if I'm wrong. But it was trying to pick up sequences of signs, which is, what teams do to try to trick the other team is to have a different sequence. So maybe it's the third sign you give, the second sign, the first sign, et cetera. So it's not as bad as what the Astros did, but it's still a bad thing. And let's be honest, it's a trend in the game. It's been around baseball since baseball was invented. And now with new technology coming about, teams are using it to their advantage, which is understandable. That progression was inevitable. So the question is, does the MLB come down on the Astros and the Red Sox in a harsh manner to try to prevent this from happening in the future? Do they make an example out of these two teams, out of the managers, Hinch and Cora? We'll see. I think that probably is the way to go, especially considering the MLB's history in trying to address cheating scandals. Of course, the steroid era is the one that pops out into everyone's mind. So they need to make a stand here. They need to do something that's somewhat harsh so that this doesn't continue. But overall, it's not just the Red Sox. It's not just the Astros. This is a league-wide issue. This is a sport-wide issue, and it should be treated that way.
Well, let's not forget, too, we talked about this when we talked about the Patriots scandal, is that if the punishment doesn't fit the crime, there's no deterrence, right? If they're going to lose, if they're going to drop 10 spots in the draft and lose some international pool money, is that really enough to stop teams from doing this? The Astros won a World Series. The Red Sox won a World Series. I'm not saying the Red Sox won a World Series because of this. And it was part of the report that they weren't doing this during the playoffs, only during the regular season. But it's hard not to see the correlation. I kind of want to go in a different direction with this. First off, it's no secret that the Red Sox in the last, call it 15 years, 20 years, 15 years, have made some questionable decisions. And firing Dan Duquette, ultimately, Theo ended up being a great hire, but Dan Duquette built the 04 Red Sox team. And you could argue that was a mistake. Then to let Theo go in the way they did, and kind of everything that's happened in the last 10 years between how they've handled John Lester, how they're handling Mookie Betts right now, all of this, I don't think it's out of the realm of reality to say, look, the Red Sox have won more World Series since the year 2000 than any other franchise, but does that actually make them a well-run organization? I would pose the thought that the Red Sox are actually not very well-run, that John Henry does not run a tight ship, and that they've kind of fallen ass backwards into three of these four titles. 04 was Duquette's team. They fired him, but his team won the title. 07, I'll give them. Theo built the wagon. That team was legit. 13, we all know about 13. That was not far from the most talented team in the league. They had strong external motivation, and everything clicked, and every what-if went right, and they won. And then in 2018, again, you had every what-if go right. J.D. Martinez continued what many people thought was just a second half surge that got him paid the year before. Chris Sale, David Price both stayed healthy. David Price was able to pitch into the playoffs. You had all these young kids performing way above what the expectations were. So I would argue that the Red Sox fell ass backwards into three of their four titles. Doesn't make them any less real, but that I would argue that's what happened. On top of that, how did the story get out, right? You had people who were with the Red Sox in 2018. I don't think we know if they're players or coaches. We don't know that yet, right? Unless I missed it.
We don't, but we know that the Astros were outed by, who was it, Fires? One of their Fires. Former pitchers. Yep. So it could perhaps have been a player for sure.
So, but we know it was somebody like close to the organization, player coach in 2018. And mm-hmm. Here's where I want to relate this to one, the strength of the Red Sox organization. And I'm actually going to bring back in the Patriots scandal right now. And I know a lot of people aren't going to want me to hear me do this, but here's the thing. Everybody has their story to tell, right? Everybody, once they leave, they have their story to tell. These guys haven't been gone from the Red Sox for 24 months, and they are blabbing about a cheating scandal. In the 20 years Bill Belichick has been with the Patriots, Lebowitz, and all of the accusations that have flown around, how many of them have been brought about or corroborated by a former player or a former coach outside of Eric Mangini, who obviously had his job on the line when doing so?
I can't recall. No, yeah.
This is a great example of, because once we get into the offseason, the Super Bowl's over and the Brady stuff settled, I think we're going to get back into this. The punishment still has to come down from the NFL, and that's going to bring the story up again. These things always come from inside. They always come from inside. And I think what you see here is the difference. Look, the Patriots have won 6, the Red Sox have won 4. But the Patriots are damn close the years they don't win it. The Red Sox, pretty much the years that they're not there, they're in last place. So this is where I would say, here's an issue of the Red Sox not being the tight-run ship we all think they are. This should not have gotten out. I'm not even saying they shouldn't have done it. I don't care about that. My stance on cheating, go back, I think it's 2-3 episodes. I don't care. If you're willing to take your licks, do it if you think it gives you the advantage. I really don't care. But the Red Sox are not necessarily the tight run ship we all think they are. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I would say this. I think you're spot on your point about, you know, the Red Sox falling into World Series. I think, you know, to give John Henry and Tom Warner some credit, they've hired some really good assets. You know, whether it's a manager and Terry Francona,
let me qualify this. I don't mean to say necessarily that they don't know what they're doing. And I'm not trying to say that they necessarily won World Series by accident.
Yeah.
But they have struggled to sustain that high level. And there seems to be issues non-related to baseball that trip them up.
Well, it speaks volumes that a team that's been as successful as the Red Sox under this ownership has such harsh criticism against that ownership from the fans. I don't think you've ever seen that. I have not seen that in sports, in my lifetime at least, so to this extent.
I guess what I am arguing is, are they winning because of the ownership, or are they winning in spite of the ownership?
That's a good question. I think it helps to hire the right people. I think it helps to have a lot of money. So I don't know if it's in spite. I don't know if it's with them playing a lot. I'm not sure. It's a good question. I think part of the credit has to go to the ownership. But I look at this incident, and I think that you have people speaking up about it potentially because, you know, there are certain people who made that connection between AJ Hinch, the Houston Astros, and Alex Cora. I think as soon as that came out, at least in Boston, you had a lot of people asking questions as to whether or not Alex Cora brought this to the Red Sox specifically for that 2018 historic season. So I think that plays into it. I also think that cheating in baseball is something that is harder to conceal from players than cheating in football. You know, stealing signs, that's something that's going to remain amongst the coaches, maybe your defensive or offensive captains. But baseball,
in football.
But in baseball, stealing signs is something that players have to be participating in. So you're gonna have more whistleblowers. There's a more likely chance of there being whistleblowers. So I think that plays into it more so than the ownership does. But I don't know. I think that, again, it's a part of the game. I think it's part of sports. And I think that this connection was made because of the connection between Cora and AJ Hinch. And it's a good thing for the Red Sox that it wasn't as intricate of a cheating scandal. But one thing I'll agree with you on is there's definitely more control from the top down with the Patriots ownership and front office than there is with the Red Sox ownership and front office. So, you know, where with one team, you know, people will go along and keep their mouths shut and kind of go with the program. The other, there's probably going to be more spite. There's probably going to be more animosity. And we've seen that. You know, people leave the Red Sox and they're not happy about it, whether it's Terry Francona or Theo Epstein or Bobby Van, whoever it is, Adrian Gonzalez, you can name 1,000 people. And although you had that to an extent with the Patriots, it's not nearly as severe, I don't think. And players usually get over it because they respect that institution. I think it plays a role a little bit.
No, that's an interesting point. I think it's interesting in the difference with the fans too. I mean, there's the slightest hint that the Patriots are being accused of anything. I'm going back, you know, before the Cincinnati stuff. I'm talking about, remember Mike Tomlin's headset in, what was that, 2015, whatever it was. You know, all of that. And the Patriots fans, they go for blood. The second there's a hint of it, they go for blood. Whereas Red Sox fans, you kind of see this happening. They're like, yeah, what are you going to do? You know, I'm sure it happened. Whatever. They still won the World Series.
And they also get the benefit of the doubt, the Patriots, because they've had the same coach and owner for a very long time. There's been stability there. When there's so much turnover and fan favorites leave town, whether it's managers or players or GMs, you know, at a relatively consistent basis, it's like every 5 years at this point, you're going to have less patience among your fan base, especially when those people who are leaving town have had success in the past. So there's not you don't get the benefit of the doubt with the Red Sox as much. And I think that, you know, people kind of want to stick it to John Henry. Now that you mention it, it does play a role. John Henry has a much different, grasp on the city of Boston than Kraft does. So people are gonna, you know, not give them the benefit of the doubt. And it does kind of directly go back to them. It's about how the organization is run and who does that start with besides the owners.
It's going to be interesting to see what plays out. I will say, for a team that, you know, loves burying their PR, it would have been a perfect time for them to trade Mookie Betts. But we were going to talk about that, but we're already like 12 minutes in. I got some other stuff we want to talk about, so we'll get into that another time. But we got a whole smorgasbord of final thoughts here to get to. We'll start with the Bruins and the Celtics. Lebowitz, if you want to take the Celtics.
Sure. The last three straight, not great, but I want to go back to a couple games ago against the Spurs. They're within 6 points of San Antonio, and on a moving pick, Kemba gets demolished. He talks back to the ref a little bit and then gets ejected after running his mouth, but, you know, for good reason, because it was a bad call. And that completely changed the complexion of the game. I mean, that goes back to officiating and basketball being putrid consistently, whether it's not calling travels, whether it's giving superstars the benefit of the doubt more often than not, or prematurely throwing out players for rightfully arguing with an official. Officiating has been brutal in the NBA really forever. In basketball in general, it's a tough thing, but it's been bad. But overall with the Celtics, they're in a bit of a skid right now, and I hope they can get out of it. But this is the wall that you're kind of worried that they'd hit. Losing a game yesterday against the 76ers when they had the lead heading into the fourth quarter, it's not what you want to see, especially from a team that usually plays pretty well down the stretch. So I'll be keeping my eyes out on that. I think we've seen what this team has done all year, and we've all been anticipating it to level off. And I think they have a great roster. I think they have as good of a chance to make it out of the Eastern Conference as anyone, but they need to sustain it and hopefully not fall into the traps that they did last season.
I would agree with all of that. Quick thought on the Bruins for me is they finally got going again against the Jets last night offensively. This is the chance to be a fun season because of one man, and that's David Pastrnak. when I say he's a new kind of dominant player the Bruins haven't had, people are going to get pissed at me because of Marchand and Bergeron, and I get that. But Bergeron's dominance has always more so been in making the players around him better. You know what I mean? Like, which you could argue is tougher to deal with as an opponent. But he's never been that flash and dash superstar. He's a guy that makes everybody around him better. Marchand had that goal stretch last year, but again, it felt, you know, more of a I'm trying to figure out how to say this without taking anything away from Brad Marchand, because he was great last year. But the run David Pastrnak is on this season is, I mean, he's probably going to lead the NHL in goals. He is just on another level. He's completely unstoppable. We haven't gotten to watch superstar goal scoring like that. Just raw goal scoring ability. That's the term I'm looking for. Raw goal scoring ability. Because Bergeron, Marchand, both going to have their numbers in the rafters. Absolutely. But I don't know we've ever seen them with the kind of raw goal scoring ability that David Pastrnak has right now. It's been a treat. And they got to get healthy, especially on the blue line. But they're going to go as far as he takes them. But it could be fun. The question is, can he keep going in the playoffs? But we're a long way from needing to answer that question. All right, we got a couple more last thoughts we got to get to. The XFL released their rules earlier this week. And I've been waiting for the XFL to set itself apart, right? We had the AAF, which was very traditional football, and they're trying to be an NFL minor league. And I'm not against any of that, but when you hear XFL, you're thinking of the scramble for the ball at the beginning of the game and he hate me on the nameplate, right? And all the ridiculous antics. I was waiting for that because they need some of that if their brand's going to be the XFL. And we got it. We got it. They are juicing the hell out of the offense in this league. It is going to be fantastic. First off, clock stops after every play under a 2-minute warning in both halves until the ball is spotted. So like the first down rule for college, right, where the clock stops till they set the ball, that is going to be every play in the XFL. They've also done a number of things to ensure teams will return kickoffs and punt returns. And I think there's a good chance we see multiple kickoff and punt return touchdowns per game in the XFL. You are going to look at scores, especially early on when the defenses haven't played together much. You are going to look at scores in the 50s and 60s, I think, on a regular basis in this league. And I am all for that. The Arena League just went out of business about a month ago. I think the XFL could see some of those scores. I was not really excited for it, which is a lot, especially given how excited I was for the AAF. I was not really excited for the XFL until I saw these rules. I cannot wait now. This is going to be outstanding.
Well, and the one thing, you know, the AAF, whatever the hell it was called, because I'm already forgetting. Yep. Yeah, I'm already forgetting about it. They didn't separate themselves, you know, with any rules or anything like that. I think the one way you can survive as a competing football league, it's not going to be with talent, obviously. It's going to be with, you know, initiatives like this. This is the one thing I'm worried about, though. If I'm someone rooting for the XFL to do well, which I am, it would be great. We're in 2020 now. There's a lot of more knowledge today on, you know, head injuries and injuries in football in general than there was back when the XFL was originally implemented. So I am a little concerned with the potential outrage crowd coming out of the woodworks and trying to oppose this league. Even more, former athletes, former NFL players who are now dealing with the side effects of playing in that league might come out and be like, listen, these rules are unsafe. There's a reason why the NFL is doing away with some of them, and we need to take more steps to make the game safer. This is taking steps back.
I see. They actually did some things with the kickoff and punt returns to limit the injuries. If you go in on the website, I'm not sure if it'll work. It's an interesting experiment. So on the kick returns, nobody's allowed to move until the ball is caught, except for obviously the kicker. But nobody else is allowed to move until the ball is caught, and instead of the kicking team lining up where the ball is kicked off from, they will actually line up 5 yards behind the return wall. So you'll have two players deep. The rest of the return team, the blocking team, will be lined up at the 30. The kicking team is lined up 5 yards back at the 35, and then another 30 yards from them, you have the kicker kicking off. So instead of a collision, instead of them running at each other from about 25 yards apart, they're both running down the field from only 5 yards apart.
Okay, that's bad.
That actually, and then on the punt returns, nobody's allowed to move until the ball is kicked. So you, again, get rid of some of the head start.
Okay, then that definitely changes it a little bit, and we'll see how that works. I think a lot of my curiosity stems from the fact that, you know, I don't know what this looks like when it's actually like
I'm not saying that will necessarily work, but it's a very interesting experiment.
But there is a potential of them running into some serious problems in which they envision plays, you know, working out in a certain way, and then it happens to go in a completely different direction. So I feel like a lot of these things, these rules that they're implementing in theory are great ideas. Maybe in practice, when you start doing it, it's like, this is kind of, you know, weird to see this work out. It's kind of awkward, and it's not, you know, it doesn't seem like a bunch of athletes, you know, playing at the highest level. It seems like you're trying to force certain rules that just aren't going to work. So I wonder, like, mid-season when they start this sort of thing, whether or not they'll have some real-time adjustments. But we'll see. It's interesting. I think half the fun is the intrigue of these new rules and how it's going to look, you know, when you're actually playing the game. So I'll watch a little bit. Is it going to keep me interested, though, is the real question. I think that's, you know, that's the battle for staying afloat, obviously.
Well, it's all an experiment, and that's what it comes down to. It's all an experiment, and it could be a thing where they tweak the rules, you know, in the middle of the season. We could absolutely – they did that in the original XFL. So we'll see.
Yeah.
One more thing we got to talk about is the Jeopardy Tournament of Goats. I actually was never a big Jeopardy guy until earlier this year. James Holzhauer's original run got me kind of locked in on it, but – you know, you want to talk about entertaining competition on television. This should be every episode of Jeopardy. I am glued to these. The questions are very difficult. The three players have very different personalities. Well, two very different personalities, and Brad has no personality. But it's been outstanding. Ken and James are excellent. Brad might be the third best Jeopardy player in the world. I don't doubt that. But he's so far behind the other two. And even Trebek's making fun of him now, which is hilarious.
Really?
Yeah, but it's like, you know, he also played when the rules were different. Like, he won a lot of money, but there were different circumstances. For instance, you couldn't go more than 5 days, and the tournaments are structured differently. So it's kind of like saying, you know, the three greatest NFL teams of all time are, you know, the 2004 Patriots, the 1986 Bears, and the 1942 Cleveland Browns, right? It's it's very different.
It's like, so Babe Ruth, if he played today, would be in double A. Yeah.
Exactly. If that. So I feel bad for kind of Brad having to be out there. But look, or we could get an amazing comeback. We could. And I love how they've structured it. And we don't know how long it's going to go. They have 7 episodes scheduled. But, you know, like a series on TV for the games 4 through 7 of Asterix and say, or 5 through 7 of Asterix and say, if necessary. So Ken could win tonight. I'm hoping he doesn't. It's nothing against Ken. I want to see this go 7 games, but it's been outstanding.
I will say this, as going back to our Ithaca College days, did you ever compete on So You Think You Know Sports?
I did. That was after I left.
So I actually, humble brag, I won that twice. But there's a difference between I wasn't – both times I was not the most knowledgeable sports fan in the competition. There's it's one thing to know – you know, a lot about everything, to be really good at trivia, like obviously these three contestants are. It's another thing to get on TV and be able to like fire off answers and internalize the questions and be quick like that. So I commend them for that. I think that's I would bet that those three people on that stage are not the most not the best at trivia. But with the time constraints and the way their brains work, they're really good at, you know, getting through these games and whatnot. And obviously they made a lot of money on these stages. So it's fun. I love Jeopardy. I'm horrible at it. I play along when I'm watching it.
Oh, I mean, these ones are so hard. These ones are,
it's another level.
They took the question to another level in this game. But I mean, that's an interesting point. Cause something I realized, I'm watching last night and like Ken was wiping the floor with James. And I'm thinking these guys are the three best. But what if, for instance, during James' run, he knocked somebody out, and the guy was only on once. We never thought twice about it. But what if that guy was up against anybody but James? He would have gone on like a 40-game run.
Yeah, that's right? I mean, like, that's a great question.
You never know. You never know. So
there's had to have been a sports equivalent of that I can't think of. But yeah, get overshadowed.
Peyton Manning's Colts.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
He kept having to go up against Brady's Patriots for all those years. I mean, he eventually got the one. But, you know, we're talking about, you know, how many rings do the Indianapolis Colts have if Tom Brady and the Patriots don't happen?
And that's one of the most, you know, talented rosters through a 5-year stretch you'll ever see.
But the
difference
difference is, imagine it's if that, but if the Colts had lost once and then weren't allowed to participate anymore. If Manning had lost to Brady in 03, the first time they met in the playoffs, and then wasn't allowed back in the playoffs.
We
would have never known, you know, how good he could have been. So it's a really interesting thing, but it's been super fun to watch. I'd love to see other game shows do this. They need to bring back Moment of Truth. I don't know if you ever watched that game show, Lebowitz.
I don't know
It's kind of reality TV. So it was the show that was on. We're going to close with this story because I've been talking about this all week because I've been thinking about game shows. It's the best game show.
I know this show where you have to lie. You have to do a truth. They put you up to a lie detector
before the show and answer a bunch of questions. And then they would bring your family in on live TV and ask you these really embarrassing questions. You had to tell the truth to win money. And there was one episode where they had to put like warnings before the episode that it was disturbing. This woman admits to like cheating on her husband. She was never really in love with him. They have her ex-boyfriend come out and ask her if she'd rather be with him and all of this. And she just keeps rolling off the truth. To the point where at one point she's just like, I don't even care about the money anymore. It's just good to get this off my chest. Her husband was there. Her parents were there. Her sister's there. She's like ruining all of their lives. All of their lives. And then she gets to $500,000 as the grand prize. It was the 21st question.
Oh, God.
And the question was, do you believe you're a good person? She said yes. It was determined to be a lie. She won nothing.
Oh my God!
After she went like completely off the grid, blah. So and then they canceled it because they're like, we can't show this on TV. There were some other bad ones. One guy lost his job because he admitted to watching adult content on his computer at work on a regular basis. They were like, we can't put this on TV. It's ruining people's lives. I would argue that show was 10 years before its time. And if they put that back, oh my goodness! First of all, with
it would be all over social media.
Right, with cancel culture, like, that is the cancel culture game show.
It really is.
Watching, you could put each question individually, clip it out on social media. It's, like, the perfect format. And just, I showed it to somebody I work with earlier this week. Like, I can't watch this. It's too painful. Watching these idiots ruin their lives for, again, they'd probably up the money now, but it was 2008. The grand prize was $500,000. Just, I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money. You know what I mean?
It's not worth it to be, you know, disowned by your entire family.
So you'd see men up there and questions would be like, you know, have you ever, you know, flirted with another woman since you've been married? Have you ever, you know, been unfaithful to your wife, whatever? And they answer truthfully. They're like, yes. And they answer truthfully. And then the family's there and they're sitting there encouraging them, like, keep going, keep going. And you think they're being supportive, but then you realize that, you know, she already knows. The information's already out there. Let him get as far as he can get. Let him get the 500 grand. She's going to get half of it when she divorces him after the show anyway. Right?
Yeah. That's
go ahead.
The one thing, though, that I would say, it's lie detectors.
By the way, all of the episodes that aired, there's like 30 unaired episodes I can't find. But like the 5 or 10 episodes that aired are on YouTube. Just search Moment of Truth.
I do remember one where it was a guy who was with – he was married to this woman, and the question was, have you put off having kids with your wife because you don't think she'd be a good –
That was the first one. Yeah, he was like a former NFL player, and that was the one I was talking about. She's sitting there telling them to keep going, and I'm like, oh, she just wants half the money.
Yeah, and he's like, yes, and she's like, oh, no, and I'm looking at her, I was like, yeah, I get it. I get it. But there's also lie detectors are 95% accurate. That means that one in every 20 questions, they're gonna give you a false representation.
And it's 21 questions to win.
So the odds are, no matter what, you're gonna lose. So that
I don't think that woman thought she was a good person.
You don't think she did? Or you
How
think
could,
she
all
did?
Right. You have to go back and watch it. She stole money from work, all the stuff with her husband, cheated on him, didn't actually love him when they got married, rather be with the ex-boyfriend. She was asked if she thinks her parents are proud of her. She said no. That was the truth. I don't know if they were proud of her or not, but she genuinely didn't believe her parents were proud of her. They asked her if she had extra food, would she rather give it to a dog or a homeless person? She said dog.
I
there was a bunch. I mean, she was Lauren Cleary. You can look it up. I'll look up what episode it is right here, Lebowitz. Will you give a last thought on this? But it's episode 5.
There's certain opinions that I'll have, but I don't even know if I know I believe them. Like, I could go either way with a lot of things. I'm a very I'm an argumentative person. So
not a lot of them are opinions. There was that one that was weird, but most of them are opinions.
Yeah, most of them, like, it's yes or no. Did you do this or did you not do it? Which makes sense. But a lot of it's like, what do you think about, like, do you love your wife? Like, I don't know. Some people might be like, at the time they answer the question, it's like, no, she was being mean this morning. I don't know. But I feel like, you know, opinions change and they're doing these tests before you're on the show. So by that, between then and when you're actually on the show, your answer could theoretically change.
Look, I don't care. It's high theater. I would love, if I could bring back any television show, Freaks and Geeks would be first, but all the actors are cool anyway. So then I'm going to Moment of Truth.
Well, I would say this, that show is quintessential.
It's not
Mark Wahlberg.
It's not that Mark Wahlberg. It's another guy named Mark Wahlberg.
Really?
But it's hosted by Mark Wahlberg.
How about that? But that show is quintessential cringe porn. It's the most cringeworthy television you could watch. So if you're into that stuff, you love that show.
You know what else it is? If you're somebody who's like misery loves company, if you're one of those people and you're in a bad mood, put it on.
Oh, yeah.
Put it on. It just watch these people suffer and squirm. Yeah. It's not even necessarily – the people who are actually answering the questions are actually – they're normally pretty calm and collected. It's the family and friends that they have – so on the set, there's the host – and the person playing the game sit opposite each other in these chairs. And like 10 feet away, there's a couch that has, you know, friends and family on it. Those are the ones who are squirming.
Yeah.
Imagine Jerry Springer with steaks.
But there's also like
steaks. That's what it is.
So the family can push a button to forego a question.
Only once. And they don't get to skip it. There's another question that gets replaced by it. It happened. I'm not going to give away too much. I want people to watch it. It happened to that woman I was talking about who totally ruined her life. There was a question skipped, and they replaced it with one that was like a million times worse.
Oh, my God.
And the host was like – the host was like mad at her. He was so mad that she was making him ruin her life. He was like, please stop. And she's like, oh, okay. He's like, no, like, I can see the next question. You need to stop me. You have 50 grand. Just walk away.
So how many people do you think went through the questioning were like on a pace to be on the show? And then after they're like, I can't do this. Like there has to have been at least like 20 people who like after being questioned are like, I can't have anyone. This isn't worth it.
Yes, there was something that said once you took the lie detector test, like you were locked.
And then you owe them.
So I was the opposite. How many people got on there like, oh, this will be fun. I'll get on a game show. And they like have boring lives with like no secrets. And they were like, yeah, we can't use this person. Nobody will,
Will
care.
You have to qualify. Like that's the thing.
You need like devious people.
100%.
Right, we've done like 10 minutes here on Moment of Truth. So everybody should go watch it. Great show. I cannot recommend it enough. Amazing television show. They're all on YouTube. You can watch them right on your phone. They're not paying me to say this. Show's been off the air for 12 years. But I used to watch it all the time with my mom. Honestly.
What brought this up, by the way?
We're talking about Jeopardy.
Oh, Jeopardy. Okay.
So my point being, like, I don't know if you could do a greatest of Moment of Truth. I don't know where Lauren Cleary is, but they should find her if they do. I mean,
who's
the champion?
Who is the Ken Jennings of Moment of
Lauren
Truth?
Lauren Cleary. She got divorced. True. She like had like.
But she didn't win money.
How long ago the show was on. She had a post on her MySpace like that she was taking some time out of the public eye.
Oh my God.
I happened to look her up the other day. Actually, we'll end on this for real. I looked her up the other day because I was curious, and she actually voiced a character in like a D-list movie that's coming out in a couple weeks. It's the first thing she's done since that show.
In the public, yeah.
So, yes, she won no money, but you don't need to win money to be a winner in my eyes on Moment of Truth.
But that's
you just
the thing.
Need to entertain. I like the people who don't win. But especially do you believe you're a good person? That's such a layup question. No, you obviously you don't. Why would she say she did in the first place?
At that point, that makes no – that's just dumb. She's a dumb person. So I want to know – like I want the – when I say Ken Jennings – like I want someone who is so shameless that they don't lie and they destroy their lives and they get the $500,000.
She never lied. She completely ruined her life. And then on the last question, a layup, she lost it all.
So that would be like Ken Jennings being up $50,000, not having to bet $1 on the last question, but he goes all in and then loses.
One person who answered all 21 correctly. I think there's only one person.
Good for that person.
I got to go through the episodes and look it up. But All right, that's plenty more truth talk. We'll wrap this up. We'll have another show for you next week. Check out all the rest, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. You can find us on Twitter at Colin Podcast. Thanks to everybody for going down that road with us. Until the next one, for Alex Lovewitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.